doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right.
Behold the glory!
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact scenario.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto
friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3. Happy to be here. Although I'm flying solo again. That's right. Dave's off in wonderful, beautiful, great white north of Toronto. But that's okay. You got me. Not only me, but we're going to have a great show today. Got our usual, our regular, the good Jay Garman with Geek Trivia. He's going to come back and answer last week's question as well as throwing something new our way. And then to follow that up, this is great. I'm excited about this. We're going to have author Chip Bell on, and Chip Bell has written, co-written a book called Wired and Dangerous, all about how consumer relations with their how the customer now is king, truly king, because of the internet age and how things have changed, not only for us as consumers, but also how things need to and must change for businesses who are working with us. And this is good stuff. It's really good stuff. No matter what side of the table you're on for that, and I think all of us, or most of us anyways, are pretty much on both sides of that table at some point or another. You know, we're both consumers, but if we're doing any sort of business, if you're gainfully employed in any way, you're dealing with customers who may not be as easy to please as they used to be back in the day, and it's something that we really need to keep in mind and pay attention to. So I'm excited about that. That's author Chip Bell. He's going to be on in just about 20 minutes or so here. And of course, we've got our usual news and views, and then to top it all off, some cool sites of the week this week. I'm going to give you some photography cool sites of the week this week, some neat things to do. We're all out. We're all taking pictures. We're all doing all sorts of fun summer stuff. Well, here's some ways to even eke just a little bit more fun out of all that stuff. So that'll be good. And then, of course, the podcast only song of the week this week. I think I may throw some Decemberists at you guys. I just picked up that new album. It's a little more country than I'm used to, but you know, gosh darn it, sometimes you gotta go country. So we'll do that, and we'll dive right in. Like, you know, it's gonna be tough for me, as it always is, without Dave looking at me, clicking his watch, making sure that we're staying on task and on time. But I'm going to do my best and try not to get too wrapped up into some of the new things that are going on right now with the internet, some of the news that's happening. I think one of the bigger things, there's two major things that have happened. Now, the one that you've probably heard the most about, there's been a tremendous amount of buzz about this. And by buzz, I don't mean Google Buzz, although I might as well, because I'm talking, of course, about Google Plus. Are you one of those lucky people that have gotten an invite and jumped into the Google Plus bath? If not, let me know. I have a couple extras. I could probably shoot one to some lucky listeners. Email me at techtalk@wrlr.fm. I've been in it now for just a little while, just because one of my buddies sent me an invite as well. I wasn't lucky enough to actually be on their top list, but I've been checking it out. Now, it's been promoted as kind of a Facebook replacement or a Facebook killer. I don't see that happening yet. They're doing a very, very good job of integrating the Google web sphere together. If you're a part of it anyways, if you have a Gmail account and you use Picasa Web for your photos, and you've got you were one of those people maybe that did use Buzz, this type of thing, then it makes it really easy. And and everybody says this one thing about it too, and I have to admit this is very true. It is the by far and away the easiest service that I have run into to add people that you actually want to talk to and interact with, your friends, people that you want to follow but not necessarily, you know, have a lot to do with, that type of thing. Very easy. They have this thing called circles. You create circles of friends and you throw them in there. Now, the one thing that I haven't tried, which is the other big thing people talk a lot about, is creating hangouts and doing things with live video. And you can create your own little hangout, which is, you know, if you remember back in the day, CompuServe and used to be able to go to like private rooms, you know, chat rooms, private chat rooms. And it's the same kind of thing. You're setting up these little private chat rooms, but taking it one step further, bringing it into the into the 21st century here, and allowing you to vid chat right on the screen there with it. Now, of course, in reaction, Facebook has added video talk to their side as well. And I have to admit, I haven't tried that either. I'm going to have to come back to you guys in a week or two, you know, when I get enough friends that are interested in actually looking at my face to do this type of thing. But I see it as being a very valuable aspect of the whole setup of communication. You know, what you've got here now with Google Plus is, I think, they're trying to take the concept of communication where you've got Facebook, you've got Twitter, you've got Gmail, you've got MySpace, you've got your Orkut, you've got your Delicious, you got a Google, you know, all these different various and variety of things, and you've got all these blasted places to try and keep track of who's doing what, where, when, and how, get your pictures up on there and all this, and it gets confusing, particularly for the average user. The user like my wife, for example. Now, smart lady, great woman, very comfortable in general with the computer, not really hooked into the whole social landscape networking kind of thing, though, and it's been a little bit of a struggle for her to really understand how all the pieces can be made to fit together, because they don't fit together naturally, but you can force them and you can tweak them and you can make it work together, and she's taken my instruction kindly and well, and put up with my rather poor abilities to train, and has done quite well at that and been able to do it. If she was on Google Plus from the beginning, much of that training would not have been necessary, I do believe. You look at it now, take a look, go to plus.google.com. You can take a look at it, even if you don't have an invite, and get an idea. They have some videos on there that'll show you what's going on with it. I think it's going to be a big deal. I don't think this is going to go the way of Google Wave, which died an ignominious, I think is the word I'm looking for, an ignominious and rather quiet death after that was released for a couple of months. And if you remember and look back at those shows, I you know, even I wasn't all that excited about Wave, and I get excited easily. So if you recall that I even wasn't that excited about Google Wave, that's a pretty good indication that not much was going to happen. It's going to be interesting to see. I started off this little bit here by saying that I did not think that Google Plus was going to be the Facebook killer that people are saying it's going to be. And I stand by that, except for the fact that it's going to have a long tail. It's going to take a long time for it to gather the amount of people and pull people away from Facebook. It may be that Facebook and Google Plus both will evolve into a situation where they can coexist somehow. In fact, that's one of the first things people started looking to do was, how can I get my Facebook contacts over into Google Plus? How can I get my Facebook pictures back into Flickr or Picasa so that I can have them in Google Plus? These are things that I think are going to have to be kind of hammered out and worked out. Now, Facebook shut down the apps that allowed you to easily migrate your contacts to Google Plus. Because, yes, they're just, you know, competition, I don't know, whatever. It you know, it just another way to make life frustrating for the end user. I can't wait to talk to Mr. Bell in a little bit about his opinion of how making life difficult for the consumer may not be the best long-term business plan. Now, on other big news, talk about making things easy for the consumer, though. You know, we're getting to a point now with Foursquare and Google, you know, Facebook Places and all these other things that are making it easier and easier for people to know where we are. I've got a little app on my phone it lets me pay at Starbucks. I don't have to pay anymore. I just use this little card that I've loaded up with money that's on my phone, and they zip-zap it with their laser machine, and it's done. Well, PayPal is taking a step further along. They want to make it easier and easier for you to be able to pay for your bills, not just in general with PayPal, and there are PayPal apps to do this, but for those people that maybe don't have credit cards or don't have a bank account, you can actually will soon be able to use PayPal to purchase things on your phone with your phone going to your phone bill, your mobile bill. I think this is really neat. What they did is they purchased a company called Zong, Z-O-N-G. They're based out in Silicon Valley, as are many of these companies. I'm not sure what Zong stands for. It's an interesting name. Now, the way that this works, the way that the current system works with Zong is that if you go into a a corporation or go to a website, is how it's been typically been used right now, and you want to make a purchase, you click on a button that says, buy it with mobile. Use Zong and buy it with mobile. You enter your cell phone number. You get a confirmation that you have to respond with a PIN code, and then that completes the transaction, and now your mobile phone gets charged, much like it would if you were to, say, call, one of those 900 numbers, or to if you were dumb enough to sign up for one of those ringtone things, or whatever, where they start charging you. You have the authority to start charging your mobile bill on a regular basis. Now, I think what's going to be interesting is to see the way that PayPal expands on this. I mean, that in itself is a pretty neat thing, right? Being able to put this to your mobile bill and all that. Now, PayPal, however, I don't think they're going to let it stand as just a direct to mobile. PayPal wants more involvement with that money, typically. And so my guess is you're going to have some options when you use the PayPal app, and maybe they're going to expand it into an app on your phone. And now the thing of this is, one of the big problems with going to using your mobile phone for purchasing, and one of the things they've talked about, and they're starting to build all of this hardware and equipment and things, near field communications and blah 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 and etc. and all this, and that's great for the consumer. You can buy a little dongle, or typically you wouldn't even have to pay for it. You just have it. The retailer, however, has to upgrade their infrastructure, and they have to change the way that they do business, and they have to purchase and invest in quite a bit of equipment for what might be a very, very small percentage of their customers that are actually interested in using near-field communication technology. And so it's got a really, really steep curve of adoption, and not from the consumer side, but from the retailer side. This Zong concept with PayPal makes a lot of sense to me as far as getting in with the retailers. All that Zong and PayPal have to do is start really promoting and marketing this service as a low-cost alternative to using credit cards. And what it requires for the retailer: a computer, an internet connection, something they've probably already got. And in this day of iPads and HP pads and BlackBerry Playbooks and Android tabs and etc., heck, you don't even need a cash register anymore. Now, you can be walking table to table. You can be at your gas station. You can be doing whatever the retail business it is that you're doing, that you want people to be able to pay for by phone, and you can be ringing them through and zipping right there, no investment, nothing else required, and it's all taken care of. The only thing that you'll need to do is some way, shape, or form link that in with whatever your accounting system in, and boy, if QuickBooks and some of these other don't jump on this as quickly as they possibly can as far as creating some sort of interaction and interface for it, I think they're missing a big bet. So keep an eye on that. I'm not an enormous fan of PayPal in general. I'm waiting for some security breaches to occur with them that's going to kind of alert us to issues that they have. But I think this is a really interesting way to go. And, you know, speaking of interesting things to do and ways to go, boy, we're already running late. Like I said, without Dave here to keep me on track, I'm always just a step behind.
Hello?
I feel like. Good morning, Mr. Garmin.
Hey, how we doing?
Pretty good. Wow, one ring. I'm impressed. That was...
It's the highlight of my day. Why would I delay it?
Oh, I am so sorry. I am so sorry for you.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at chores the rest of the day, so this doesn't involve any manual labor.
This is the summer of the honey-do list. So,
yes, it is.
Man. Well, I'm flying solo here again today, so I I've been trying to keep a little more on track and on time than I was last week. We've got, again, it's one of those packed schedules. Last week we had Matt Richtel, and this week we've got Chip Bell with a discussion of consumer changes and the way that the internet has changed the way that we act with the businesses we do deal with. And I was just talking about PayPal and Zong and Google Plus. I see you were one of the first people on Google Plus as well.
Yeah, I don't really know how that happened, but it's interesting. I like it and I don't. I think it's really a great combination of a lot of Google products.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is that they've segregated my manual posts, my plus ones, which are sort of like my likes on Facebook, and then my Buzz Incorporated posts. So they're in three different streams.
Yeah.
And that to me is a little tedious. I mean, I appreciate that I have the option to segregate them, but I would like the option to integrate them too.
Yep. I haven't been paying enough attention maybe, but I don't believe that one of the ways that I do a lot of my kind of interaction with fans and so on is I guess I'd be considered a curator. I share articles that I find that are of interest. I know you do the same thing as well. I don't see those showing up in my stream at this point. Those things that I've shared through Google Reader.
No, they go into Buzz. But they don't go into my posting stream, which annoys me because, like you, I am a curator. In fact, I think the value, my Twitter fans have out and out told me this, that my primary value is not anything I say personally. It's just all stuff I find. They don't want to hear from me. They just think I'm a good filter.
Yes. And I think I do a bit of the same service as well. Maybe not as much as you do, but some of the same sort of the same concept. And I don't know why that wouldn't be part of your general stream, because in order for me to find your Buzz stream, I now have to kind of drill down into you. I have to go into Jay, and then I have to click over to the Buzz tab and all this. Whereas, you know, if it was all part of the stream, like I kind of feel like it should be, it wouldn't be such a hassle. And I don't know if there's going to be a way to integrate that. And you're right too. The plus ones are also, again, why would you separate them considering it's so vital a part of how we communicate now?
Absolutely. Well, what I always go back to when I make these criticisms or hear these criticisms is the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation wasn't that good either. It got better. So I'm going to let them get this first season kink. Go, you know, out, and then, you know, if in 90 days it's still this tedious, I probably won't use it much.
Yeah.
Honestly, no matter what, I still see Twitter as my primary channel because, again, I'm a design minimalist, I'm a feature minimalist, and Twitter is exactly what I want.
Mm-hmm.
So, I can't see myself leaving that. Now, it would interest me if I could make Google Plus more Twitter-like, which again is the unification of the feeds. So we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, it's a really tough situation, I think, trying to bridge that gap between the Twitter concept and the Facebook idea. And that's kind of what Google Plus is doing, is it's trying to sit right in between that, where you've got the Twitter-esque sort of stream, quote-unquote, but they want that stream to be like Facebook posts that you can comment and update and share on. And so in order to kind of get around the dichotomy there, then that's why they've broken Buzz out completely, and the plus ones are also kind of out of the loop as well. And I hope they see the problem with that and bring that in together. But I guess
but yeah, for my take, if I was tomorrow by some horrible misjudgment on Google's part, named the product manager for Google Plus, to me, the killer feature of Google Plus, which really has some legs, is circles, where I can curate my contacts. These are my friends. This is my family. I've got groups for a blog circle I'm in for Sci-Fi Signal. I've got my coworkers. I've got people I know, but I don't, you know, they're acquaintances, but not friends. I've got people I just want to follow that, yeah, I'm just fans of. That's great curation. I wish I could take that level of curation of my contacts and set up systems for what I share with them and what I consume from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, I would love to have my buzz posts go to, you know, the people that follow me and people I follow and that sort of thing. And I would love to only get, you know, updates from my followers and my friends and maybe my acquaintances. I don't really need them from my family because that's basically my mom, and yeah. I really don't need her updates.
She's just going to call you anyway.
I like to like set my circle, what I share and what I consume.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
to me would be, it's a little tedious to set that up, but I think, especially having followed the conversation, everyone's really loving the circles concept,
mm-hmm.
and it's attracting an audience that likes to curate.
Yeah.
I don't see this being the Facebook killer, but what I see the advantage being is my mom will never be on Google Plus. But the good news is my mom will never be on Google Plus.
Yes. Well, I completely agree. And that's the one thing that's really struck me is how incredibly useful the circles are compared to like the privacy groups or whatever you call them on Facebook. You know, in Facebook, you post something, it's really, really tough to make that posting only visible to a, you know, discrete set of individuals. Whereas in Google Plus, that's built into it, is that if I'm posting something that, look, I don't necessarily want, yeah, my mom seeing this or, you know, friends. This is really just a work kind of thing for me or, you know, or vice versa. This is something I'm posting. I don't want people that are from my work to know that I just went out and had a couple of drinks. You know, they don't need to see that. It's really, really easy to say this is for friends and this is not. And this is for people following me on the Tech Talk show. And this is for, you know, everybody because, yes, it's a wonderful thing and I want everyone to know about it. The next thing, the other part of it too, which I hadn't realized when I first jumped in there, it's an instant messaging tool as well. Not IM instant messaging, but instant as far as you can click a button to say, you know what, I want to send an email to all those people with this post. And it's built right in. And boom, there you go. You can send a, you know, 900 people with one click.
Exactly, because it integrates with your Gmail, because that's another great killer app I think they haven't leveraged properly yet. And if you've not played with the Huddles and the Hangouts, they are really interesting. You know, this is sort of like, okay, these are the good parts of Google Wave they couldn't figure out how to untangle from all the weird and bizarre parts.
Mm-hmm.
But this
mm-hmm.
notion of I can sort of create an online chat room ad hoc with, again, a curated membership is really interesting. And I think there's some real potential there. So they've got a lot of good pieces, but this is very much a 1.0 release.
Yep.
And I can't wait for 2.0 already.
Yep. Yeah, I do not think that it's going to go the way of Wave, though. I don't think this is going to die quietly and quickly. I think if it does die, it's going to have a much longer tail, just because it does have some really useful features built into it.
I completely agree.
So, so I got to ask, how many daddies did Dolly have?
right. Last week's question, how many dads and how many moms did Dolly the clone sheep had? And the interesting answer is that Dolly had three mothers and no father.
Ooh, no father. You know, that's supposed to be a pretty bad situation. You got no father in the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is a very non-traditional, non-nuclear family.
No wonder Dolly died young. She, you know, she probably picked up smoking and...
well, she didn't die of lung cancer.
See?
We know that.
See? There you go.
the way it went down is they took an egg cell from one female sheep. They extracted the mammary gland of another female sheep, and then from that mammary gland extracted a single... blastocyst cell and then took the nucleic DNA from that mammary cell and replaced the original nucleic DNA in the egg cell and sort of fake created an embryo with no father involved, and then took that fertilized in vitro embryo and put it in a third female sheep, which brought it to term. And they tried this 277 times, and Dolly was the only test case that made it to adulthood.
Wow.
Others were born, but she was the only one that survived to adulthood. And again, she only survived to half the expected life of her species of sheep, which is a Finn Dorset. But they very much attribute that to her having been indoors her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
if you keep a sheep indoors, for its likelihood of contracting certain viruses which lead to cancer just skyrocket. So she lived the average lifespan of an indoor sheep, which is to say a test lab sheep, but half the typical lifespan of a Finn Dorset. So she lived 6 years out of an expected 12.
Okay.
So that's sort of interesting that it is now scientifically possible to replace men. We're not there with humans, but it is proof of concept exists that we are now a superfluous gender.
and a lot of women are cheering right now.
Yes.
Gosh, and here, oh man, I'm trying to make a reference to Andre Norton. That's who's jumping up and down. Her name escaped me for a moment. You know what? I'm still wrong. Ursula K. Le Guin. That's who I'm trying to think of. Who would be jumping for joy with Left Hand of Darkness and her book? It was all about a society run and completely women based. Is now an actual scientific possibility.
Yeah. So, now the island of Themyscira, which brought us Wonder Woman, is no longer quite so fictional.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. So again, science finally catches up to science fiction, and whether for better or for worse.
Yeah, I think we're better off without the universal jetpacks because we can't drive in two dimensions, and so putting us out there in three is just really, really ill considered.
Yeah. A fender bender at 250 feet in the air is going to be a lot more difficult to work out with the insurance than.
It's going to be more collateral damage. I don't want to come home one day and realize that there is a three car pileup in my living room.
Yes.
Because that was where they just landed.
Yes, exactly. Not what we need to do. So what should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, a week from today, July 16th, is the, let me make sure I've got this right, the 66th anniversary of the Trinity nuclear test, which is the first detonation of a nuclear explosive. And it was one of the nuttiest, like most pure examples of crazy mad science in real life history. Because when they were doing some of the early math on nuclear explosions, it was later disproven before they did the test, but there was calculated to be a slim chance that they could ignite all the oxygen in the entire atmosphere and wipe out every living thing on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But they did it anyway. and it got to the point where it became sort of a matter of curiosity and wagering at the Manhattan Project exactly what the explosive yield of the Trinity test was. They set up a betting pool for how much yield would this explosive set off. And of course there was an option in the pool for wipe out all life on Earth. Now how you collect that bet, I don't know.
Yeah,
but it was an option in the pool. And so the question, now that obviously didn't happen, and the person who bet that for all our benefit didn't win. Mm-hmm. But the question is, which of the Manhattan Project scientists won the pool for the explosive yield of the Trinity test?
Ooh.
This is a guy that went on to make other very significant contributions to science. So who is the physicist that accurately guessed the yield of the world's first nuclear weapon and won money for it?
Oh, that's a great question. And I want to find out, too. You don't have to answer now, but I want to find out next week when you come on, what were the odds given for that person that bet that the all life on Earth would be exterminated?
I will try to track that down. I don't know that right now, but I'm still looking into that. I want to know who bet on extension of human life and how much money they put down. I'm going to try and find that out.
Yeah, I would love to know that. I would love to know that. Man, now that is a great question. And I didn't realize that next week was the anniversary of the Trinity nuclear test. So, unfortunately,
July 16th, 1945, they bloated up good.
And we're all still here, so that's a good thing. Yeah, and it was only 6 months after that that they were able to get one out to Asia and end the war effectively. Well, Jay, as always, fantastic to have you on. JayGarman.net for anybody that's missing out on you, and very soon you're back on Tech Republic too.
I went live yesterday with a geek trivia question that our listeners already know the answer to.
Man, I missed it. I'll have to take a look. You know what I'll do is I'll look in your Google stream. I bet it's in there, and
it
or at least in your Buzz, one way or the other. Well, Jay, thank you so much as always for taking the time with us, and hopefully next week we'll have Sparky back on too. I know he loves to hear from you as well.
All right, well, look forward to it. Have a good weekend, buddy.
All right, you too. Take care. As always, fantastic to hear Jay Garman talking to us. You know what? We are way, way, way behind. I'm calling Chip Bell right now. I'm not even doing a delay here. We're way, way off of the time schedule that I had expected to be on.
Here we go. How are you doing, Michael?
Good. Good morning, Chip. You're on Tech Talk on WRLR. Apologies. I'm flying solo here today. My co-host, who is also the station manager, tends to keep me a little bit better timed and online here.
I understand. I'm just delighted to be with you.
Oh, we're excited to have you as well. I have to confess, I haven't read every page of the book, but Wired and Dangerous is fascinating. I've been flipping through it. I've read the first probably 4 or 5 chapters or so, page to page, and can't wait to get through the rest of it. Why don't you give your nickel explanation of what Wired and Dangerous is, and then let's jump into some of the things that you talk about in the book.
Perfect. I would love to. Well, we wrote the book because of the huge change in the customer today. We think of it as sort of the perfect storm. And if you think about perfect storm, and we all saw George Clooney in the movie, it's sort of a combination of several things brought together to create an unfortunate situation. Factor number one is the fact that today customers tend to be much pickier coming out of the recession. They tend to be much more oriented toward value. They tend to be more fickle, quicker to leave you if anything goes wrong. So that's the first component, is that coming out of the recession, their standards or expectations are higher. The second factor is the fact that in many ways organizations have sort of changed what I call the service covenant, how we serve the customer. And they've migrated more toward automation, self-service, probably for efficiency and cost savings, but that has oftentimes left the customer feeling angry when it doesn't work, sort of like being in an elevator that's stuck and you don't have a telephone. Mm-hmm. But the third thing that's really made it Wired and Dangerous so relevant is the fact that the customer today is so powerful. With the Internet and the reach of that, they're able to bring down an organization in almost overnight with the way in which social media can connect with so many so fast. The word of mouth has really circumvented the word of mouth that used to be there. And I think those three factors is what led us to create a wired customer. They're connected, but also potentially a dangerous one.
Yep. Yeah, and I love that phrase, the word of mouth, you know, and it's so true. And the example you use in the book, Wired and Dangerous, is, you know, the one that I think pretty much every listener is going to be familiar with, was the United Airlines passenger whose guitar was treated a little poorly, let us say, and United didn't step up to offer any sort of recompense for it until he went on on, use the internet and his social network and millions of people who saw his video to really put pressure on United and force them to honor that service covenant that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And we talked to Dave Carroll, and, you know, as you say, over 10 million people have seen that, that YouTube video. And the Economist blog has suggested it could have cost United as much as $180 million. That's pretty dangerous. But when we talked to Dave about his situation when we put it in the book, he told us, he said, you know, Chip, they didn't need to do a great deal. All I really wanted is to someone to acknowledge that they'd made the error, and there was never any question about who the culprit was, but and to apologize, but more importantly, to tell me how they were going to change their approach and let me know that change. Yeah, I wasn't looking for a lot of money. I wasn't looking for, you know, obviously he wanted them to reimburse him for the repair to his Taylor guitar, but the fact that he was very reasonable in what he expected, and he didn't get that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, and that's one thing that we tell people on air here, and you see a lot, is that, you know, people, when customers, when they're dealing with businesses and feel that they've been wrong, that's really the most important thing when you go and make that phone call, is to have a clear idea in your head of what a reasonable expectation should be for you if you've been wronged. You know, is it a refund? Is it a you know, a compensation for your pain? You know, whatever it may be, you need to know what it is that you're asking for. Mr. Carroll clearly had that, and United didn't step up and do it, and that became very visible very quickly. You know, Mr. Carroll's a unique individual in that he had an ability and desire to, you know, make this into a clever thing, and he was musically talented, obviously, and able to make a really funny little video about what United did. And not all of us have that option. What other options do we as consumers have to get that sort of same power and voice without having the musical ability or the other ways of enticing those 10 million viewers to hit on us?
Well, I think first is to go face to face or ear to ear with the many times the organization, if there's an error or something they've done that left a customer disappointed, don't have that feedback. And I would say I'd start with the traditional ways to look for that, and if that fails, then I would escalate it to someone in a management chain, hoping that that would bring more attention to it. But I think if that fails, then the social media becomes an important outlet to reach a large number of people. Mm-hmm. And the smart organizations today, Michael, are the ones who are paying close attention to social media and what's being stated. They're out there on top of it quickly. They're looking for ways to provide a quick response to the customer who's been aggrieved, or at least perceived they've been aggrieved. And again, as you say, I think if we approach it with the attitude of what's a reasonable person expect? We know there are crackpots out there and sort of crazy people, but I think the typical customer is fair, and they don't want, you know, they don't expect an organization to be perfect, but they do expect them to care, and they have a very clear idea of what that fairness should look like.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. You know, you mentioned the power of the consumer and how that's changing, and the consumers are fickle now, too. And in the book, you refer to that as well and talk about how, you know, it's they expect a lot more, and that's part of the reason why they are willing and eager sometimes to switch businesses if they don't feel that service is being met. But I think another aspect of this fickleness is back to that, you know, wired and connected sort of concept, that the cost of change for a consumer now is lower than it's ever been. You know, in the past, the one example you use is someone changing their insurance provider. In the past, if I thought that my insurance provider was not offering me the best deal, why, I'd have to give a phone call or two to some other people. I'd probably have to, you know, walk down the street and talk to my buddy who I know had just changed insurance providers and do a lot of legwork to figure out what was really going on and see if there was anybody else that was local that I could use. that's not the case anymore. You don't have to do it. You know, 30 seconds in a Google search if you're good at it, and you've got probably two dozen places to pick from that are going to instantly offer you lower cost providing service and some Yelp reviews and other things to let you know how good they are.
Absolutely, and it's not just the access, as you say, through it's easy through the internet, through Google, through Yahoo or Yelp, or other search ways in which we go about getting an insight into how well that company is. But most organizations have gotten wise and made switching costs low by making it so easy. The insurance agent is a good example. They don't, you know, used to we worried about, oh gosh, I've got to go through all this explanation, I've got to provide all these records. But now they're saying, you know, you switch very, very easy. You're, same as your doctor, your physician. You know, you don't like the way the doctor has been treated you from a customer service standpoint. You say, you know, I own those records. You may have them, but I own my health records, and I can simply demand a copy of all those health records and walk. So customers today are much more empowered. And again, the internet has contributed to that. And I think the other thing you mentioned is the fickleness of customers today. They're much less likely to show allegiance to brand. We know from research, brand loyalty is down 15% to 20% from 2 years ago. They pay much more attention to their experience and, again, the experience of others. You know, customer reviews tell us a lot, much more than the ad campaigns we might see on the internet. So
yep.
I think that has opened customers to say, you know, I don't have to be loyal when I'm not getting the treatment that I think is appropriate.
Yep. I think that's very true. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the consumer side of things and how powerful we as consumers are. But many of my listeners and myself too, you know, we're involved in business. We do things every day where we need to work as a business owner or a business provider, a service provider to the consumer. And there's a real flip side danger to this as a business owner, of course, that business owners need to change the way that they operate and the way that they interact with consumers today because of all these things that we're talking about. Are there businesses that are doing better at this? And if so, I mean, what are they doing that's better? Clearly United didn't do well, but there's some companies that have done well.
Exactly, and I think a good example in the same industry is if we take a look at what Southwest Airlines has done in contrast to United. They have really ramped up their whole approach to listening to the customer. They have created a much greater social media presence. They use Twitter and other devices to say, I can hear a customer, enter into the conversation about the things that are going wrong. I can intervene much more rapidly. There are lots of tools available that are free out there on the internet to help an organization monitor what's being stated about them. I mean, all you have to do, for example, on Google is put in a Google search to say anytime they mention WRLR on a Twitter or on any sort of internet blog or whatever, it pops up on my screen and I can determine it. That gives me early access and a quick way to respond. And I think that's what smart organizations do. Southwest has done a great job, but Southwest has always had a history because they have been so people-focused in how they create a great experience for the customer, how they make the customer. They have a fascinating proposition. You would think an organization, a company like Southwest that uses an old plane, a hard seat, herds you on the plane, actually has passengers line you up, you don't get an assigned seat, and then they feed you peanuts, you would think they would not be successful. But obviously that lowers their cost, but what they do on board is provide you that great experience and that fun experience, which is what they're all about, so that your memory is not the peanuts. Your memory is how funny the flight attendant was with what they said during the safety speech or various things like that. And so I think more organizations that create that kind of presence and experience are the ones that are going to win.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, when it comes down to it then, you know, when you look at the value that an organization can offer, and you start breaking out, you know, things that you do to differentiate yourself from your competitors. You've got lowered price, you know, and certainly, you know, a company like Southwest hit upon lowered price as a way to offer value to customers. You know, speed of service, you know, the quality of the service. But it sounds like there's a new value being added in here, or at least this value is rising in importance, and it's that sort of one-on-one, you know, high touch rather than high tech sort of interaction that people are coming back to wanting again.
Exactly. And I think a good example of that is Zappos. And I use Zappos because not only are they a great company, but here's a company that relies heavily on self-service and heavily on automation. You know, it's almost all interaction is online. Yet, they get really fabulous marks for great customer service, because when you do have a problem, there are a gazillion ways to access. There are many, many back doors, and you aren't caught on the internet and it's not working. Mm-hmm. And when you do get someone, when you do get something on a web chat or a live person, and they encourage you, if you go on their website, every page is like, we are begging you to talk to us, if you need us. Mm-hmm. And when you do, you get absolute over the top service. You get people who are happy, upbeat, cheerful, who work hard to make it highly personalized, all about you. And I think they're a great example of an organization that has been renowned for their high-tech approach to the marketplace, but they've combined it with the high touch that creates that great experience.
Yeah, you know, and that actually is a great example of one of those bridge companies, too, because, you know, buying shoes or buying clothes, this is not something that, as a consumer, I think naturally you think, oh, I can just do that over the internet just as well as I could in person. You know, books and food and things like this, in a lot of cases, you think, you know, what does it matter if I see it first or not? But shoes, we feel that those need to be kind of personalized and customized to the way they feel and the way they look. So Zappos being able to do that and make a case for saying, look, you can still have some of those same experiential bonuses that you would in a store on the internet and make that work as a business model is pretty astonishing.
It is. It's amazing. And to me, it even makes a stronger case why I know a lot of your listeners are brick-and-mortar companies, and they go, our presence is face-to-face or ear-to-ear. It's not over the internet, so what do? And I think organizations that are brick-and-mortar, a restaurant, a retail chain, you know, have a much more powerful opportunity to create a very impressive and renowned experience, because you do have that face-to-face. You do have a way to create that highly personalized, I know you, I see your face. You know, what amazes me is when I walk into a store, you know, I've already had to get in that car. I have to drive to that store. I have to find a place in the parking lot. I have to go in the store, find a clerk, and deal with the cursed person at the cash register, and all the while knowing I could get this in a second on the internet. Why you wouldn't, as a retail organization, have the most over-the-top, happy, fun, exciting, accessible, mm-hmm. knowledgeable frontline people on the planet? Because that's your differentiator. You can't compete on price. You can't compete on ease. So what do you have to compete on? And again, I think it's creating that great, inclusive, kind of compelling experience that makes the customer says, I could go on Macy's.com, but I think I'll go to the Macy's store.
Yep. Now I've actually got a listener question from this is from someone who's a longtime listener, owns a small music shop, and when he heard that I was going to have you on, I talked to him about what the book was about, and he wants a copy of it, but he also too, which I've got for him, I'm going to give him the one when I'm done with it. And but he had the question. He said, well, look, I'm a small business owner. Most of his work is face-to-face, like you're talking about. But he's also got this, of course, somewhat internet presence, and people write reviews. How much should he worry about the fact that there's some guy who, for whatever reason, doesn't like him and continues to post bad reviews up on Yahoo Reviews, and I don't think he mentioned Yelp. I can't remember what other ones he mentioned.
Sure.
A couple of places. There's no way to delete them. You can't really, you know, come across well trying to combat someone like that in a one-on-one online battle. The flame war is not going to work.
No.
You know, and your other customers, maybe they're not as, you know, they're just not in there writing positive reviews because people don't do that sure. as much.
Right. Well, I think, first of all, I would take the high ground and indicate to this particular individual, you know, and you might even outline on your website or on your in your chat room or wherever he has a presence and a way to interact with this individual, this is what I've done, and I've tried very hard to respond to you, and we may not be for you. Mm-hmm. You know, the customer's not always right. We're all customers. We know we're not always right, and sometimes we aren't the best. For that particular individual. And so I think I'd take the high ground. And oftentimes, if you deliver over-the-top service, you're going to get people wanting to review you on the Internet. Mm-hmm. And I think the more positive reviews you have, I've got a good friend of mine who has a best-selling book out right now, and if you go on Amazon.com, you can see he's gotten 50 reviews on his book. And there's one almost all of them are five-star reviews, which is the highest you can get. But he's got one person out there who gave him a one star, and slammed the book. Well, you know, you're going to get one. If you're in the business of customer service and you're out there in the public, you're going to get that sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you want to make sure I got 49 that say the opposite, that are authentic and real and not simply reviews my cousin wrote.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I think that's something too that consumers are getting better about. And this is what my answer to them too was that looking at the reviews themselves, hopefully people are getting a little smarter and looking at these reviews and not taking them always at face value. You know, you can read into it and say, well, what are they really saying? Is there a specific issue that they're complaining about, or are they just kind of complaining because that's who they are?
Exactly.
You know, and on the flip side, is this someone who really read the book and has a positive thing to say, or are they just building up their review count because there's some benefit to that?
You better believe it. And, you know, here again, you know, we know that there are some customers out there that mamas didn't do a good job weaning them, and they sort of got up on the wrong side of the bed.
Yep.
And they're going to have that attitude. That's part of the challenge of being customer service. What you hope is, again, the lion's share of those you serve and serve well will overshadow it. And again, as you say, customers are getting much more mature in how they look at those customer reviews, recognizing that you can't make everybody happy.
That's exactly. In fact, if you try to make everybody happy all the time, chances are you're guaranteeing a failure.
Absolutely. You can't be all things to all people. You'll be nothing to. And so here again, I think that's part of our business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Chip, I apologize. Like I said, we got such a late start. I've got to pull us to a close here. I've been looking through your blog, though, and I want to make sure that listeners know about that. It's real easy to remember, wiredanddangerous.com. Are there other places that people should go to look for information about you or your co-author, John Patterson?
Certainly. We each have our own website. Chipbell.com is... or you can go to johnrpatterson.com, provides, and there is a route to that from the Wired and Dangerous blog site as well.
Great.
And both of those will provide backgrounds of other books that we've done and so forth. So I would welcome people go to chipbell.com or wiredanddangerous.com.
Fantastic. Yeah, and we should mention that, too, is that between the two of you, you've got just an incredible history of working with the marketplace and understanding businesses and consumers and the way that they interact. And if Wired and Dangerous isn't for you, you'll surely find something that's of value in the blog or with the other writings that you guys have put together. Just a really impressive
stuff. I appreciate that, Michael. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chip. Just a real pleasure to have you on. Very much appreciated, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend.
You too, Michael. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Yep. Bye-bye.
That was Mr. Chip Bell, author of Wired and Dangerous. You can find out more information at wiredanddangerous.com. Man, impressive guy. Impressive guy. A vet, too, by the way. We didn't mention that. Always like to put a shout-out for the vets. Gosh, you know what, though? Of course, we're, as always, seem to be, just a little bit behind, but we're still going to do it. I'm going to crank two of these out. I've got two really quick ones for you. Cool sites of the week. I promised them. I can't not do it. I promised them to you. Now, like I said, I was going to do some photography ones. I love these. I love doing stuff with my pictures more than just posting them on Facebook. You can have a lot of fun this summer by doing some kind of cool stuff. Now, if you don't have an iPhone, you do not have probably the what's the name of it now? I'm trying to think what the name of the iPhone app is. There's an iPhone app that lets you automatically do all this goofy stuff to your pictures. You know, puts a little border around it or changes it to sepia tone and all this other stuff. Well, if you don't have an iPhone, you don't have that, right? And you can't do it to pictures you already own, or can you? Well, it turns out a company called Pixlr.com, that's Pixlr.com, will let you do it online for free. You upload a picture or even use your webcam, and you can do all the cool, fun stuff that you're getting from your iPhone-owning friends with that other thing. Or even if you just don't care about the iPhone stuff but want to go in and have some goofy fun with your pictures, you can actually come up with some pretty neat effects with it, as I said, with borders and the other things, and they give you some suggestions and ideas. So check that out, Pixlr.com. And of course, it's free, as is most, if not everything, on the Cool Sites of the Week. Now, there's another one, though, too. This type of photographic post-production work just fascinates me. I love this kind of thing. It's called Tilt Shift. And if you haven't seen it, you almost have to see it to understand it. But the best way to describe it is you take a picture of something in real life. You know, maybe it's a city view or a shot of, it works best with inanimate objects like a train or, as I said, a city, something like that. And you shift and tilt, and that's why it's called Tilt Shift, and then blur some areas of it, and it winds up changing it to look, as opposed to having taken it with a standard lens, it looks like it's been taken with a macro lens. And what that does is make it look like it's a miniature, like you built by hand this incredibly detailed little model and then took a picture of it. That's what it looks like. I know it sounds goofy. You got to take a look at it to understand it. It's the Tilt Shift generator. Go to labs.artandmobile.com/tilt shift and you'll find it there. Neat stuff. They actually do have an app for iPhone too. Their online thing is totally free. I don't know if they charge you for that iPhone app or not, but for my money, I would just do it online. And you can actually download a little Adobe Air app for it too. And man, we're running so late right now. If Dave was here, I think he would just have my head in a basket by this point. What a fantastic week this was. What a great show. Shouts out to Jay Garman as always, and Chip Bell, fantastic. Somebody just jumped in and let me know Instagram was the iPhone app that will let you do all sorts of goofiness, and the vignette app for Android is also supposed to be good as well. Thank you from The Broken, alerted us to that online at WRLR.fm, and you are listening to WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. I'm going to leave you with Don't Carry It All by the Decemberists. It's off of their new album, The King Is Dead. I love the Decemberists, one of my favorite all-time bands, kind of an alt-folk sort of feel to them. This is a little more country than I normally prefer, but gosh darn it, if it's good country, how can you complain? So we're gonna fly that in at you, and we will be back to see you next week. With Dave is supposedly going to be back and joining us. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Here we come to a turning of the season. Witness to the arc towards the sun. A neighbor's blessed burden within reason becomes a burden born of all in one. And nobody knows. Let the earth fall from our shoulders. Don't carry it all, don't carry it all. it's hiding. Return this quiet searcher to the soil. To raise a glass to turnings of the season. Watch it as it arcs towards the sun. And you must bear.